Mr. Pop.
No, I'm just wondering what he's doing in the bedroom if he's going to love her like he's never loved her before. Like, just, you know, stick to the basics, John.
This is Ruck and Roll, your weekly shot of sport and music with Kevin Hillier, Brian Mannix and Mark Fine.
And away we go. Welcome to Ruck and Roll on a rain-soaked Victoria where the three of the contestants tonight are because it's been pouring down rain all day in Melbourne and surrounds. I'm in the surrounds of Inverloch. Brian Mannix is in the surrounds of the Gold Coast. What's it been like? Oh, sorry, I said the three of us were in Victoria. You're not, of course. You're in Queensland. Is it raining next? It normally does on the Gold Coast at about 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah, it's sort of been a bit drizzly on and off today, but, you know, still walking around with thongs and, you know, no jumper.
Thanks, Lavinia.
That's good.
Lovely. And join us. Fine, he's away. If you've looked at our Facebook posts, you'll have seen he's catching fish left, right and centre up in the Northern Territory with his mate Paul. So he's not with us, but Kenny Francis is deputising as always. G'day, Ken.
Hooray. Yeah. Always a thrill to be here doing Ruck and Roll. Good to see you, boys.
Good to see you. And we've got a great chart. We've got a lot of footy to talk about, tips to talk about, all sorts of things to talk about. Ken, as per usual, has been adding about 150 gigs. He does more gigs than you, Brian.
Well, he probably does.
So we'll find out the latest that you've been to, because I know you've been to a few lately. But let me give you the chart that we're going to do this week, because it is a beauty. Ken supplied this one. 10th of July, 1981 from 3XY. I wasn't there yet. I was still in Brisbane. And the top 10 singles are a very, very mixed bunch. Number 10, This Old House by our mate Brian Shaken Stevens.
Shaky.
Number 9, another one of our old mates, Kim Wilde, Kids in America. Number 8 is Vienna by Ultravox.
Ugh.
7 is Turn Me Loose by Loverboy. 6 is Who Can It Be Now by Men at Work. Number 5, Gotta Pull Myself Together by the Nolans.
Oh.
Stop it, Brian.
I used that gag in my countdown show.
I figured you might have.
Gavin's going.
I reckon every
single... Right now
single,
on countdown, I've got to pull myself together.
Yes, every single jock in the country did that one. now, where was I? 4, Billy Fields, Bad Habits. Great song. 3, Betty Davis.
Speaking of got to pull myself, Bad Habits.
Number 3, Betty Davis Eyes. Should the Bad Habits come before the got to pull myself or got to... No, don't, anyway, that's semantics.
No, he's got to pull himself and then he can realise it's a bad habit.
Exactly. So that should, yeah, so it should be the other way around.
Yeah.
Number 3, Betty Davis Eyes, Kim Carnes. Number 2, Stars on 45 by Stars on 45. And number 1 was Devo Live, the mini LP by Devo, which I must admit, not talking about the LP, but that whole concept of having EPs and LPs in the singles chart used to shit me to tears and still does.
Wow. It's a really interesting chart, actually, and there's 2 mini LPs.
Yeah, there is. On this Pretenders chart. One?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And the Pretenders one was just pretty much their last 2 singles and I think 1 extra track. So if you're a bit of a Pretenders fan, you bought it just for that extra track because you would have had the previous 2 singles.
It's a microcosm of a million different music sorts. This is kind of the early part of the 80s was the last bit where all the songs were in there and then the sort of mid-80s it started to become much more streamlined into dance music and pop music, and you didn't get the weird ones, you know, like you've got in here. There's a little bit of Kazali in us all from Mike Brady in this chart.
Which is another great footy track from Mike.
Yes. Yes, in fact, Sarah, my wife, was walking around this morning and she hadn't seen this chart. She's walking around this morning. She asked me about Robbie Flower and I said, why are you asking me about Robbie Flower? She said, because I've got this lyric in my head of this song that mentions Robbie Flower and Jesselenko and all that. And she started singing. I said, that's a little bit of Kazali. She went, yeah, I know. I said, well, and I hadn't even mentioned to her that it was in the chart that we're doing tonight. So,
But it is a great chart. There's some really interesting stuff on this chart. And it's like, as you say, it's a real microcosm of all those different styles that were happening. And it's before we got into that dance music. We were just past disco.
Yep.
But there's just some really interesting, really 50s doo-wop influence type stuff in here. There's, as you say, the mini LPs, which Brian, you would have a great relationship with the mini LP. That was just such a great idea, wasn't it, to release a mini album as a first release?
Well, yes. We did it a couple of times because you just got a better chance of climbing up the charts.
Is that why you do it? Is that why it's done? Not because you've got...
Because kids would go, well, this is only 7 inches, but this is big and it's got a cover and all of that. And so, you know, you'd buy it because it was perhaps more collectible.
Yeah. See, I bought some EPs in the 60s. I remember in the late 60s buying some EPs because there was four songs on it. And I have to say, every single one of them that I bought, including probably my favourite, which was one by The Groove, all had one really bad song on it. Three good ones and one really bad song.
Oh, I reckon the Beatle one we had was all good songs, only four songs on it, but they were all good. I think Return of the Red Baron was a bit of an EP, and Return of the Red Baron was the only good song on that.
I remember actually being really disappointed when the X-Men's first release was that live mini album.
Salive, is it called Salive?
Yeah.
Salive one. Because I'd obviously seen you guys live at Festival Hall and My Music Bowl gigs. So I was well aware that the songs were great and obviously the band was great live. So I could see the point of putting out a live recording. But I just thought as a first release, my first thought was, how's this going to get on Countdown? Because on Countdown, you mime your hit.
Yeah.
How's it going to work when you come on and mime a live recording?
Yeah, exactly.
I always thought that Mushroom should have gone with one of those tracks as a studio recording first. And then after that, when obviously that would have worked because you had the following and the reputation there ready to go. And then they could have hit them with the live mini LP and as they did it quickly. But
what did you want to do, Brian? What would the band want to do?
Oh, we just at that point would do whatever they told us to do.
Yeah.
We just, you know, we got signed the day before and then we were recording. But interesting, because I agree, I think the songs on that first mini album are good, but the recording is just horrible. So interesting enough, we got all these tapes we did from, a few years ago, and we kind of recorded, we were in the studio, so we recorded all of the rehearsals. So we've been going through them and we've got some really good new versions of some of those songs from Salive One, which we'll no doubt release later in the year. So there you go.
Good, right. Fantastic.
Good. So that's the chart we're dealing with. What was your first, what caught your eye the first when you looked at the chart first, Ken? What was the first song you went, oh, or you went, ugh?
What caught my eye was that mini album at number one, because there's quite a story with that. And it's, of course, as you say, Devo Live.
Yep.
And everybody in our history looks back on the fact that Whip It was a huge hit. And so when you hear classic rock stations playing a hit from 1981 from Devo, they'll play the studio recording from Devo of Whip It.
Yeah, they do.
Whip It, the studio recording, was never a hit in this country.
Yep.
The hit was that live mini album.
Yep.
Which has a live recording of Whip It On. In fact, that opening stanza of the first three tracks, like a medley, all joined together.
Yep.
And that is where the hit came from. It's like when classic rock stations now play Kiss's Rock and Roll All Night. They'll play the 1973 studio recording. That was never the hit in this country.
No, the live version was.
It's the live version. Yeah. It's got to be the live version. 4KQ had it, the mighty 4KQ.
Oh, right.
So much. And Brent James, he knew which tracks to play. But no, radio plays the studio recording. It was not the hit in this country.
It's a bit like Melbourne. A lot of Melbourne radio stations, when they were still playing it, always played the Seals and Cross version of Summer Breeze.
Yes.
And I was in Brisbane and it was a hit. The Seals and Cross version was a hit in Brisbane. But in Melbourne, it was Stylus.
Stylus, Mighty Peter Couples and Stylus.
And I never understood. I remember in Gold one day, it coming up and I rang Mark Johnson, who I think was the PD at the time, and said, mate, why are we playing Seals and Croft? I said, for God's sake, it was the Stylus was the hit version in Melbourne, not Seals and Crofts.
And the response?
I can't remember.
Right. Probably would have been research tells us.
Yeah, probably. Oh, God. Now, what was the first thing caught your eye, Brian? The first song you looked and went, oh, or
gotta pull myself?
Why did I even ask that question?
I think the song that first caught my eye. No, that was the song that first caught my eye. I said, "Oh, beauty."
I remember the Nolans coming out here. They were lovely girls. Lovely girls. Four sisters, I think, from memory. They were delightful girls. A bloody awful song, though.
Well, I reckon it's a great song.
Oh, it's a bloody awful
song. And the reason I really got a soft spot for it, I'll wait till later.
Okay. Wait till later. The thing that immediately caught my eye was Billy Field. I must admit, I always, it's one of those songs you can't help yourself. Whenever it comes on or whenever someone mentions or whatever, everyone does a version. It's like a bloody, a Bob Hawke impersonation. Everyone does one. I can't help myself. Yeah, everyone.
Claude the Crow did it.
Yes.
He did on Shell's Label.
David Lee Roth did it too.
Did he?
Yep.
Wow. Did he really?
Okay. Yes, he did. I think on one of his solo albums.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It might have been on one of his mini albums.
He did have those.
He did. All right, so we'll get to the chart a little later on and a couple of messages on social media about we did rush the chart last week. We won't be rushing the chart this week. We'll make sure we spend a bit of time on it at the end of the show. Now, the other thing I have to tell you is that unless I have received – oh, hang on, I have. Oh, here we go. Oh, no, I was wondering about Finey hadn't sent me through the points.
Oh.
Or the or his tips. But now he has. I've just got the text message now. He just got back. He says, I'm sorry. He's given me the points for each of the games, his tips, and a photo of him with a great big huge fish. Great.
Right.
So some of that is actually useful. Some of it isn't.
Well, I'm just thinking of his phone. He's dialing in the tips with all his fishy fingers splurting all over his screen.
Won't be good.
There'll be flies all over his phone. Oh.
Yeah, no, won't be good. Won't be good. Fish guts. You get fish guts on your fingers.
Oh, yeah.
See, fishing's a great pastime, and I love, I used to love doing it with my old man, but when we get back from the boat and the old man would get the fish and start gutting them, oh, that was me out of there. I couldn't do that.
Ever see somebody skin a rabbit?
Oh, no, I don't think I've ever witnessed that.
That's crook. It looks like a baby.
Oh, no, don't.
The fur coming off. It looks, it's not good. Killer ones even worse because they don't die and then you got to break their neck.
Yeah, I remember when we used to go to the farm over Kilcoy when I was a kid and they used to delight in killing the chooks on the block and then throwing the chooks up, and the chooks obviously would run around like chooks with their head cut off, hence the expression. And I remember the first time I ever saw that. I've never been so horrified in my entire life. It frightened the shit out of me.
Hmm. Yeah.
Quite traumatic.
I couldn't even dissect the frog in science at high school. I couldn't do any of that stuff.
Where was that, the Wonder Years or one of those? What film was that where or is it a John Hughes film where they did was it a Ferris Bueller? What was it? It was one of those films where they did the dissection of the frog and they turned that into like an Animal House scene. With all the kids releasing the frogs because they wouldn't cut them up.
It's generally been in most movies. Yeah. You'll find the frog going into the girl's school bag or something in the club. No.
In that movie, they all escaped to the French restaurant next door.
Yes, never to be seen again. All right, I'll do the wash up at the tips from Lenny's Fine Foods. Fine, very fine. Foods and very fine tipping too. From round three, not good, Brian.
I know.
But in fact, you were the worst of the three of us this week.
I figured I would be.
Yeah. You only got 14 points.
Ouch.
Finally got 15.
Yeah.
22.
There he goes. Ooh, he's in the lead.
22. So what that means is, so you've gone to 61, Finey's gone to 51, and I'm on top on 67. But, I'm not getting cocky, I'm not crowing, I'm not doing anything because I know how quickly it turns in this.
Yes.
And I reckon this gather round that we've got coming up, it could turn very, very quickly because you had a really – hey, what do you think of the Bombers? Bombers and the Saints?
It was a good game, I suppose.
It's close.
Yeah, But no, I don't know. There was nothing that I saw that made me think, wow, the Bombers, we really look like something this year. And I think that who'd we play?
Saints.
Oh, the Saints. Well, they had Max King out and two of their fast guys. And if they'd kicked straight, they would have beaten us. Same with Hawthorn would have beaten us if they'd kicked straight.
Well, so, that's the story of the footy in general, isn't it, really?
Well, yeah.
I don't know if you saw any of it, the farcical situation on Easter Monday, which is today as we record this, of the game being stopped at three-quarter time because there was weather approaching, severe weather approaching the MCG. Well, it never actually hit the MCG in terms of lightning or anything. I saw a giggling Dermot Brereton do a three-quarter time report saying, I don't know what we're waiting for because there's no lightning, there's no thunder, there's rain, but, you know, the boys should be out there playing. But then they go through this thing where they set a time, they do an eight-minute warm-up, and they go, the game didn't finish till nearly 7 o'clock.
Well, I think it was the same people that cancelled the Moomba procession, wasn't it, that made the decision today?
I think you're right. There's some genius things going on. We're overprotecting every. We live in such a nanny friggin' state, don't we?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I know we're living in this litigious age where everything's litigious. You know, everyone's suing at the drop of a hat, somebody's suing somebody. So, you know, as it is with the bump in the game, you know, the AFL's really concerned about any sort of legal action. What about the spectators? I know all the players obviously went off to the rooms, but what's their obligation to protect the spectators?
Oh, well, on the screen, they had a great big sign saying, you know, severe weather is approaching. And then it said, go to a sheltered area. The patrons, please head to a sheltered area. I'm thinking, well, you know, that's all a bit, then somebody Nazi with a you know, little yellow jacket on him, he's saying, you can't go over there. You're not allowed over there. It's standing around only.
Keep it clear.
Just absolutely ridiculous.
Anyway, you couldn't pack them into a pub like you used to, Brian. Those days are gone.
Oh, look, yes, I agree. So I'm still on the lightning thing with the surely if lightning was going to strike, it'd hit the towers. You know.
You mean those great big things with the lights and the electrical
that thing, yeah. That
circle the entire MCG like a, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to pop down. You know, I suppose if the grass is wet, I've seen it on the soccer where the lightning hits the ground because the grass is all wet, about five players just fall down because they've all been electrocuted.
Yeah, but they fall down in soccer anyway.
Well, that's it. You can't tell,
sorry,
really.
Sorry, cheap shot, but I had to.
All looking for a free kick.
Yeah, someone had to do it. Look, I think we overcompensate these days for, as you say, Kenny, the litigious nature of the entire universe these days. Everyone's so frightened of it. It's ridiculous.
And we worry about, I've heard these people talking about kids and stuff, and they said, you know, these days we worry about their emotions more than whether they're going to be strong enough to, you know, handle life. You know, like he's talking about, you know, how dads used to grab the kid and throw him up in the air and then he'd catch him again. And, you know, so like it's sort of teaching the kid that, like, oh, you know, it's a bit dangerous, but you kind of, all those little things kind of make up somebody to be a bit tough. And we don't do that anymore. It's all, oh, Jenny's got, she's very upset. Oh, well, let's just stop the world because Jenny's upset.
Can you imagine, just to take me back to your days on your bicycle when you're riding around the streets of Bentley, Kenny. Helmet?
No helmet.
Knee pads?
No.
Elbow pads?
No.
Skin protective tracksuit pants and you know, a clubber on?
No, none of that. I think I might have had a clip just around the ankle just to stop the flares getting caught in the chain. That was about as far as it went.
How about yourself, Brian? Were you kitted out with a complete, sort of sumo wrestling suit when you jumped on your bike and went down to the shop?
No, I had a dragster with a really big sissy bar. It was so cool. And, you know, I'd be riding that in my Speedos and thongs. I'd be riding it. And like Ken, you put a lacquer band around your flares because they get caught in the chain.
Correct.
But, yeah, you know, and you just, the chances you'd take, No, but you'd fall off and you go, oh, well, I fell off.
Yeah.
And you skinned your elbow or your knee or whatever and you know, funnily enough, it healed.
You'd be calling an ambulance today.
Oh, gosh. No, you'd be calling a lawyer, then an ambulance.
Yeah. We'll get the ambulance and the lawyer will find you.
Yeah, the lawyer will be chasing the ambulance down the street. Oh, goodness me. Oh, times have changed. It's silly. But just back to the footy. Brisbane are in a bit of trouble. Imagine that. Now, sorry, I just have to say, I've never seen greater evidence of the press in a urinating contest than I've seen played out over the weekend with this scandal that is the Lions' end-of-season trip, which has thrown the club into crisis.
What happened at the season trip?
Well, apparently a bunch of them went to America on a trip. Now, when we first heard about this, it was that it had caused enormous rifts within the playing group. It had caused relationships between players and their partners to break up. It had caused players to talk to other players about relationships. It had caused players to talk to players about what happened on the trip, why wasn't I told?
And sounds like caused, married at first sight.
I think they're trying to turn it into that. And it had caused the problem that the Lions have on the field, that it was causing all these problems. So this was how it was first portrayed, that, you know, in this trip to Vegas, end-of-season trip to Vegas, all this happened. Then as it transpired, that was one particular press person, media person's version of it. Then another bloke got a hold of it the next morning and said, well, actually, they never went to Vegas. It didn't happen in Vegas at all. So that's all, you know, rubbish. The club has said, no, there's not a rift. They've asked the playing group. They've actually addressed it with the playing group. They've done all that stuff. Lee Matthews is on the board of directors of the Brisbane Lions. The first he heard about it was when someone talked about it on the radio. So the board didn't know anything about it. The players had already kind of said, well, this is what happened. He broke up with this girl and they've gone off and whatever. Like that never happens any other time. And then the third layer of the press, so the second bloke gets on and says that what the first bloke said was rubbish. It didn't happen in Vegas. This is what happened. Then the third one gets on, who didn't talk to any players, who spoke to sources within the club.
Oh, it was Carolyn Wilson.
Bzz, correct.
She's always got, my sources tell me.
And then it's all, and I'm not knocking Carol because this is the way the thing plays out these days. But then she's talking about, you know, I spoke to the club this morning and their person told me this and this and this is what happened, this is what happened. It's just the greatest pissing competition by members of the media to try and be the one who gets the scoop that explains why Brisbane have not won a game this season. They haven't won a game because they're not playing well enough. And there's a faction, you know, factions within the playing group. They're all so desperate to get a bloody story up and be the one that has the inside information.
Yeah, but what I just don't reckon you should be able to write a story if you go, my sources tell me that at the Essendon Football Club, blah, 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 blah. Well, that could be your source could be a bloke in the pub that's pissed out of his mind. And basically,
the source could also not even exist at all and could be just something that you
could
make
just
up.
make up any old piece of shit that's going to get clicks and damn the torpedoes.
An insider of Ruck and Roll tells me there is a massive rift within the Ruck and Roll ensemble.
Really?
And that's why Finey's not here this week. It's got nothing to do with him wanting to catch fish or be away and tick a thing on his bucket.
Well, my sources tell me that Finey's not actually in Darwin.
No.
It didn't take place in Darwin
at
all.
A rehab clinic?
No. He's in Vegas.
Oh, he's in Vegas.
With that. He's marriage counselling some of the Brisbane Lions.
Well, my sources tell me.
Oh, here we go.
That somebody on a regular basis is slipping something into Finey's coffee, put him out of action to get a gig. I don't want to say too much.
Yeah, no. Don't want to point fingers to anybody, but Brian, you do that again and there'll be trouble.
My sources tell me there will be trouble.
But really, that's what it's come down to in all this stuff. I mean, now you might have people inside a club who might talk to you, but this whole thing now about every second story you pick up is, someone close to this has told me and will not be identified for reasons of anonymity. Jesus Christ.
My sources tell me that Molly's going to be appearing in the new production of Riverdance. No, it comes from a very good source. My sources tell me.
Yep. That's the way it should be. It's the preposterous nature of wanting to one-up each other all the time in the media now that it's just turned into a farce. And the media now spends almost its entire time, and I'm doing it now, talking about the media and not about what's going on. I mean, I'd much rather hear a discussion about what someone thought is actually wrong with Brisbane.
Mm. And why they it's all fake news, people. It's fake news, believe me.
But you expect that type of thing from New Idea or Woman's Day, you know, because you know that 90% of their stuff is all fabricated. And when they say a source close to the family says, you know, but it's now crept in, as you say, to actually real news.
Accepted practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. There would be old school journos who would be, you know, turning in their grave at where journalism's gone. And there's a bunch of current journalists who still proudly go, I'm a journalist. Not anymore.
No.
Not anymore. Not in that old style kind of the integrity that many of them had.
That's why journalism appeared in the Death Eliza 3 weeks ago.
Did your sources tell you that, or was that fact?
My sources told me that, yes. My sources.
All right. Well,
is it that 24-hour news cycle that's brought that on? Because when I grew up in the 70s and early 80s and was watching the footy would be reported on a Tuesday or a Wednesday morning with the tribunal results.
Yep.
And the next thing you'd hear, unless there was some major injury at training, the next thing you'd hear was the lead up to that weekend's games. So, you know, that was the analysis of football. But now it seems there's got to be something happening every single minute of the day. So everyone's trying to break some sort of story.
Yeah.
Collingwood captain gets new pair of tracksuit pants, front page and back page.
Well, that story about the Vegas trip and that was the lead on at the front of I only physically get papers on the weekend now. I don't get them during the week, but on the news sites and all that, Herald Sun and all those, that was the lead story. That was above any other story, not just the lead football story. That was the lead story, you know, Brisbane and Brisbane Rock by Vegas scandal type deal. And it was like, oh, really? And I think you're right, Kenny. It is the 24-hour news cycle has contributed to it, and also the fact now that there is what I think at last count 600 or 700 journalists, inverted commas, covering football, covering AFL football.
Yep,
they've all got to have a story. So now they sort of feed off each other and steal each other's stories, and then try and make them their own. It's
And a small incident becomes a huge incident.
Oh, and the other thing is, you know, they'll turn what is a minuscule story, because they've got it, they'll turn it into, this is big news, and he's broken a toenail and it's going to be bloody, you know, massive. And he did while he was, you know, sitting next to a hooker in a bar in Vegas. Oh, Jesus.
My sources tell me that the hooker had a venereal disease.
Yeah, and used to play for the Crows.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get to the tips for this week. Kenny, chime in on these ones so you might be able to pick up
You know what my tips this year. I'm doing woeful.
And Norm as well, you know, you've come to a good place then, because none of us are setting the world on fire. Thank goodness in this tipping competition that Finey devised, you can actually catch up really quick, or you can die in the ass really quick, can't you, Brian?
Yes, you can, Kev. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Brian. Righto, Adelaide. Well, it's a gather round, so everyone's in Adelaide.
Gather round.
So there's no real home. Well, there's a couple of home teams, but yes, it's the gather round, children, because we're going to Adelaide and we're going to play footy.
You know, yesterday in America, it's Easter Sunday.
Yep.
But no, they had to come and declare that date as Trans Visual Day.
What's that mean?
Well, rather than letting Jesus have his day.
Oh, okay.
It's all transgender day. There's colours all over, the rainbow colours everywhere. And then they went through all of the list of days that there are, like there's Lesbian Visual Week, Awareness Week, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on. Like,
Well, there's a lot of letters to cover, Brian, in LBQTK plus XYZ ABCDEFG.
Well, plus means everybody, I presume. So it's just, look, just get over what you where you stick your dick. It doesn't matter, all right? Just, you know, we accept it, fine, move on. We're all Australian, we're all American, whatever you want to be. But just, you know, oh, you're a Jewish Australian, you're a black Australian. Oh, give it a rest. We're Australian.
Yep.
Fuck.
Written, spoken, and authorised, Brian Mannix. No fixed address as of about 5 seconds ago.
Please explain.
Righto, let's get to the tips. Lenny's Fine Foods tips, and I've got Finey's now that he's sent them through, so we're ready to go. Here we go. It's Adelaide and Melbourne, and the betting here is, well, the scoring is Adelaide will get you 6, Melbourne will get you 4. It's being played Thursday night at the Adelaide Oval, so a bit of home ground advantage there for the Crows. What do you think, Brian?
Well, Melbourne must be better than what I think they are, and I don't think Adelaide have been much chop. And I'll take Melbourne for 4.
Melbourne for 4. Farnie's taking Melbourne for 4, and I'm taking Melbourne for 4. Kenny, who do you like?
I've tipped the Crows. So
have you?
If they come through for me.
Okay.
Being the gather round, being at home,
okay.
I reckon they get an extra surge.
Could be.
I think both Adelaide teams lost last year, didn't they?
And the gather round, I don't remember.
I don't either.
No, don't remember. Friday at 5:10 at Norwood Oval. They're spreading the games around between the Adelaide Oval, Norwood Oval and Mount Barker. This one's at Norwood Oval at 5:10. It's Brisbane, the winless Brisbane, taking on the winless North Melbourne. And this will get you 1 for Brisbane, 9 for North Melbourne. It doesn't get much juicier than that, Brian Mannix. But I am going to go for the 1 and take Brisbane. Kenny?
Yeah, nobody wants my tips, but I'm going Brisbane.
Brisbane.
Not follow me.
Finey is going for Brisbane to take the 1. And Brian, is that juicy enough for you?
No, it is juicy enough, but Brisbane are going to have a mission to prove. North could go good for, you know, quarter, half a game, but can't sustain it.
You're going to love this one. This is the Friday night game at 8:10 at Adelaide Oval. It's Port Adelaide at home to Essendon.
Guess who we played last year in the gather round? Port Adelaide at home, Essendon.
Did you win?
I don't know. We might have.
Oh, okay. Well.
But we'll win this week.
You'll win this week.
How much am I getting for that?
7.
I'll take it.
You'll take the 7?
I'll take the 7.
No, I won't. I'm not taking the 7. I'm going Port Adelaide. Finey has gone for Port to win. Kenny?
Yep, Port Adelaide for me.
There you go. Brian, you're out on your own there. Could be a big pickup for you there, Brian.
Absolutely. It will be, Kev.
Saturday afternoon, 1:30 at Mount Barker. Sydney are taking on the West Coast Eagles. Sydney will get you 1. West Coast Eagles will get you the rest. Kenny, Sydney?
Sydney, yeah, definitely.
The winless West Coast Eagles.
I reckon Sydney should only be a half a point.
It's almost. I reckon he might have almost been tempted to give Sydney 0 and 10 for West Coast because there's no one in their right mind, even you, Brian, is going to tip West Coast to win that game. They were poor against the Doggies. They started well, but they were poor.
I just saw the final score was 106 or something to 30.
Yeah, and I didn't think we were terribly impressive, to be honest. But we did all that you needed to do to win by that margin, and that wasn't much.
Well, good percentage booster.
Yeah, it was. 4:20 on Saturday afternoon at Adelaide Oval. It's a doubleheader at Adelaide Oval. Carlton will take on Frio, two teams in very good form. Carlton will get you 3. Frio will get you 7.
Now, I might have some 7.
You might have some 7 for Brian. Hang on, 7 here, Brian, for Frio. Finey's going for, where are we? Carlton. He's going Carlton. Kenny?
I'm on Carlton.
You're on Carlton. And I think I have to be on Carlton. I've tipped Frio a couple of times this year, but I'm not convinced about him. I've got to be honest. Geelong and the Doggies play on Saturday night, the second in the doubleheader games on Saturday night at the Adelaide Oval, 8:10. Cats coming off a funny old victory in the end for Tommy Hawkins' 350th game. It's a split one, 5-5 here, so obviously I'm going for the Western Bulldogs. Brian?
I'll have the Pussycats.
The Cats? You don't tip them very often.
No, but they look good today.
Finey is going for the Bulldogs. Kenny?
Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. Cats did look good today. I'm on Geelong.
Cats?
Yeah,
Cats.
Good on you, Kenny.
There you go.
Welcome to the winner's circle.
Finally.
Yeah, Ken, don't get carried away.
Sorry.
Don't believe everything. That may be fake news. Sunday afternoon, 12:30 at Mount Barker, the Gold Coast Suns will take on GWS. Gold Coast will get you 8, Brian, and a suntan, and GWS will get you 2. So I am GWSing. I think they're a very good team. I believe Finey is GW Giants. Yes, he's going for the Giants. Kenny?
Got to be the Giants. Just their form this year, too strong.
Now, Brian, this is a difficult one for you because this is your home place. This is as I look at you on the Zoom feed that we've got here, I can see in the background the sun, the surf, the sand. Actually, all I can see is the curtains are drawn, which is not a bad idea. For once.
I don't think they travel too well, Gold Coast, but
an eight for the Gold Coast.
Look, I think I'd be annoyed if they did get up, and I think GWS are, you know, they're looking like Sydney GWS grand final at the moment. But you know, Gold Coast, they've had a nice rest. They'll be probably, you know, most teams lose when they come off a bye. And I'll stuff it. I'm going to the Gold Coast.
Very good. Yay. He went for the 8. Mm. He's gone the 8. So there's another one you won out on, Brian, that one and the Essendon one so far. Norwood is the venue at 3:20 on Sunday afternoon for Richmond and St Kilda. Richmond coming off a surprise win over Sydney, and St Kilda, of course, coming off that loss to the Bombers. Now Richmond will get you 6. St Kilda will get you 4.
I'll have 6.
And Finey's going for the 4, so he's going for St Kilda, obviously. Brian, you're going the 6.
No, I'll go the Tigers.
The Richmond Tigers. Kenny?
No, I just can't tip my team this year. Let me down badly, like they do every year. I've got to go Richmond.
Ooh, jeez.
Sorry.
You've jumped off quick.
Well, not really. I jumped off them years ago.
Oh, okay. Then, all right. I'm actually going to go St Kilda. I think St Kilda can beat Richmond. I'm not convinced about Richmond. I know they're doing it without Dusty and all their, you know, supposed big names, but I'm still not convinced with them. I think St Kilda will bounce back and win.
They've got a lot of names out, and I don't know. When you've followed them for over 50 years like I have, and you've never seen a winning grand final in your lifetime, and they play like they have been lately. No, sorry.
Ye of little faith, Kenny. I was in the same boat with my beloved Bulldogs, Kenny, but ye of little faith.
Yes, but you had hope. This is the difference. You had hope.
Yeah.
I've seen 4 in my lifetime.
There you go.
I don't know if I'll get to see 5. Been waiting for 21 years or 22 years.
It's been a while. It's been a bit.
23 years, yeah, since we've been any good, yeah.
All right, last game of the round is 5:10 Sunday afternoon, Adelaide Oval. Collingwood will take on the Hawks. They finally got a win. They play the Hawks. They were gutsy today without being brilliant. Collingwood will get you 2 and the Hawks will get you 8. I'm going for Collingwood again, as always. Finey's going for Collingwood also. Kenny?
Collingwood has to be.
Brian, there's 8 for the Hawks. 8. 8, I tells you, Brian. 8.
Look, they play with a lot of endeavour, the Hawks, but I just... I think Collingwood for two.
All right.
I'm stuck with Nick out enough this week.
67 for me, 61 for Brian, 51 for Finey. That will change very quickly, I reckon. Now, a couple of things we didn't mention. I want to mention the NBL. That was won by the Tassie Jack Jumpers.
The
Jack Jumpers won game 5 and took the title. They won game 5 in Melbourne against
Melbourne. Did Butkus go down to see the Jack Jumpers?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know if Dick was there at all. But congratulations to them. And the store GIF was run today in absolutely abysmal conditions. The rain.
They had to stop the race halfway through because the lightning, so they had all the players stop. They had a pie, something made a fag, and then they continued the race half an hour later.
They ran it in 255-metre sections because they couldn't run the whole thing at once. So there was a bit of a stop-start thing. But, no, they did in the end.
You're joking. They
no,
did that.
No, I'm joking.
Oh.
Chloe Maxwell-Powell won the women's and Jack Lacey won the men's. So well done to that. And the most amazing conditions you'll see. The place was 3 feet underwater and at midday and they finished up running it.
Cliff Young came third.
Yes, he did. They could easily have done it in gumboots. When you watch the side-on running of it, you couldn't tell, but then they showed the front-on footage and the splashing, the water splashing up with each as they ran. It was unbelievable. I don't know how the hell they did it.
And I think it's only ever been cancelled previously for COVID, obviously, and during the war.
I think that's
only
correct.
Two things ever stopped it. And today it's the run. It was torrential there.
Oh, it's unbelievable. In fact, they postponed it and postponed it and postponed. They couldn't even, Channel 7 couldn't even have a coverage link to it because the lightning was apparently that bad in the area. They weren't going to turn anything on to, you know, fire up any of the satellite dishes because they were frightened of what might happen. So it was very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Disappointing for the runners.
Why was that?
Well, they're not going to be on TV.
Well, they were on TV in the end.
But it was
It was the fastest run in terms of from when we said we're going now to when it was finished and over and presented and done all that. Quickest probably presentation they've ever done in the history of the race, I reckon. But it was good. It's good that they got it done and got it up and running. Righto, Brian, guess what it's time for?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Defilizer.
You need more Vincent Price every week. More Vincent Price every week.
Oh, we love it.
Now, a couple won this afternoon. Michael McMartin, who was the Hoodoo Gurus manager for 40-odd years and who stepped away from that in February because of health reasons, obviously very severe health reasons. He passed away this afternoon. So very devastating news for Dave and Brad and everybody involved with the Hoodoo Gurus. Barbara Rush, the actress, passed away at the age of 97. She was in the movie, remember, It Came From Outer Space back in the 60s.
It was quite
a groundbreaking movie for its time. She won a Golden Globe for that.
Good on her.
And she was in Peyton Place for many years too, was one of the regulars on Peyton Place. And if you saw her face, you'd go, oh, I've seen her in a million things.
Now, I'm more impressed that she was in It Came From Outer Space.
97 she passed away at. M. Emmett Walsh, the actor who was in, talk about character actors whose face, the minute you see him, you go, I thought he was terrific. He was in 220 films and TV shows in his career, which is bloody unbelievable. He passed away at the age of 88. He's in the Character Actors Hall of Fame. I didn't even know there was one.
An example of his work, Kev?
He's in Fletch. He was in...
Who was he in Fletch?
Yep, he was in Blood Simple. Was in his first ever role was an uncredited role, small sort of role that he had in Midnight Cowboy. So he's been around since the sort of late 60s. Look him up, Brian. As soon as you see his face, you'll go there. He sort of had the comb over going on. But a really, really good actor, M. Emmett Walsh. Lou Gossett Jr. passed away at the age of 87. He's a great actor.
He's really good.
Really good actor. Roots. What was his biggest one? I think he won an
Emmy. Who did he play in Roots?
He was Fiddler in Roots.
Okay. And there's one where he's an alien where he's really good in.
I did a fair few films in the latter part of his career where I think Planet Something is the one you're talking about. He won an Oscar. He was the third only after Sidney Poitier and a woman whose name I can't think of now. Third African-American to win an Oscar. He got an Oscar for An Officer and a Gentleman for the role he played in that.
That's the big one for him. Yeah, he got an Oscar for that.
Yeah, got Best Supporting Actor for that. And he would have been at Sharon Tate's house when the massacre happened. He was partying with the mamas and the papas And they wherever they were, they said, oh, well, we're all going to Sharon Tate's house. We'll meet you there. And he said, okay. He went back to his house, had a shower, a shit shave shower shampoo. And as he was walking out to leave his house to go to Sharon Tate, looked at the television, and there was the reports of the murder at Sharon Tate's house. He was just about to head there.
Wow. So, and he was in The Deep, which was, Peter Benchley, who wrote Jaws. Yes. His next book was The Deep.
Jacqueline Bisset was in that?
Jacqueline Bisset and Nick Nolte.
Yes.
And he was the bad guy in it. And it was, everybody was hoping it to be as good as Jaws. It wasn't. But
no, it wasn't.
What happened to him in that? And I think it was one of the first roles he had to shave his head. But a moray eel pops out and grabs his head and crushes his skull. So that was his demise in The Deep.
Doesn't have the same ring about as a white pointer coming up.
You don't have a natural fear of moray eels.
Not really, no.
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 No. They're cheeky little buggers.
Yeah, you're not sitting in the picture theatre squealing when that sort of rises out of the water, are you? Going, it's a big slimy-looking slug thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Nah.
You won't sit on the Universal Studios tour either.
No. No, I wouldn't have thought so. No, not yeah. And the music would, would have been all like, whereas, that is the best piece of music. That's one of the best pieces of suspense music ever.
Yes, it is.
I reckon.
Well done, John Williams.
Yes. And the final one in the Death Eliza is a mate of mine, Les Twentyman, passed away at the age of 76. Is having family's agreed to a state funeral, which is a terrific recognition of the work that he's done. I've known Les for God knows how many years now, the early part of the 80s we met. One of those blokes who I always wondered how he managed to be such a likeable, bright, great human being when he was surrounded so much in the work that he did with misery and horrible things, domestic violence and drug addiction and all the things that, people with guns and knives and gangs and all that stuff that he saw in the streets, and yet he was still, really well-balanced, bloody good bloke. Very sad to hear of Les's passing. And there was a very, very emotional fair few people I bumped into at the footy on Sunday, still very, very raw in their emotions about Les passing at the age of 76.
Well, he did a lot of great work.
Oh, bloody oath, he did. He did, and he was on call 24 hours a day, you'd be with him and the phone would ring and he'd say, I've got to go. And he'd jump in his car and be off to help a family who were in distress and needed to get a family into a safe house or something like that. There was always something going on and he was always available to people and he did an enormous amount of work. I was really proud to be a patron of the 20th Man Foundation from day one. So
well, he got you off the drink and the drugs, didn't he, kid? he's a big part of your life.
Not exactly, Brian, but
he got you out of that cardboard box and into a house. You're one of his best success stories, I reckon.
You got some great success stories. You
idiot. Yeah, but none better than yours.
idiot. I said it was a patron, not a patron as in,
You're a patient.
Not a patient. A patron, you idiot. All right, close it up, Brian. Not your
ladies
mouth, the Death Eliza.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it would appear you made it through another week. Until next week, this is the Death Eliza.
Beautiful. All right, let's get to our chart. The 10th of July, 1981. Fire away, Kenny.
Actually, I wouldn't mind if you guys go first because I don't want to steal anyone's thunder.
No, you go. You go because you're...
I'm getting a beer.
Yeah.
All right.
Brian's getting a beer and I've got no thunder. So you fire away.
As I said earlier, the first thing that stuck out was that Devo live mini LP at number one.
Yep.
But the other thing that always stands out to me when I look at any of these old charts is I look at just how many of those songs on that top 40 are still on the air today on radio.
Okay.
And then how many songs aren't. And there are always so many great tracks on these charts that radio now just totally ignores. And this chart is absolutely full of them. I mean, there's some absolute staples there of current day playlists. I mean, Betty Davis Eyes from Kim Carnes has been on the radio ever since. Turn Me Loose by Loverboy. Kids in America, I still hear every second day on the radio.
Yep.
You've got absolute lost classics. You won't hear one single track from that Devo Live mini LP. And 3XY in the day played the live recordings. They didn't play the studio recording of Whip It, which was on the Freedom of Choice album, which is in the album chart on that chart.
Yep.
They played the live stuff. Never hear it. Aaliyah by Donny Iris. What a great track.
Yeah, it is a good song, isn't it? It is a good song.
Never hear it.
I didn't realise. I did a little research on Donny Iris today. He was in the Jaggers, that band that had the rapper. He wrote that.
Really?
Yeah, before he was sort of – his real name's Donny Iserix or something. But
Donny Osmond.
but he was in that. And then he was a member of Wild Cherry for a little while after they had played that funky music. But, yeah, that's a really good song, Aaliyah.
Absolutely. But you never hear it. Love You Like I've Never Loved Before by John O'Banion. Do you ever hear that on the radio?
No, never. No.
That is a great track. Brian, you wouldn't remember that one from 1981?
No, I'm just wondering what he's doing in the bedroom if he's going to love her like he's never loved her before. Like, just, you know, stick to the basics, John. Let's not, you know, leave her armpits alone, for God's sake, man. Control yourself.
Whack it up on YouTube when we've finished this, because it
I wonder what you're going to say then, Kenny. Jeez. Yeah,
maybe he's going to whack it up, and that's how he's going to love it, like he's never loved it before. Kenny was about to give
a bit of Kama Sutra going on here for a moment.
Whack it up.
Gary U.S. Bonds is on this chart.
Oh, I love it.
This Little Girl, a track written by Bruce Springsteen.
Yep.
And Bruce and the E Street Band had a lot to do with Gary U.S. Bonds' recordings around that time. I think Bruce even produced that track.
Yeah, he did.
When was the last time you ever heard radio playing that track?
Oh, I can't remember. I love it. Fabulous song. Clarence Clemens plays sax on the E Street Band's on it. Stevie Van Zandt produced it with Bruce. And Gary U.S. Bonds was so impressed with what that song did for his career, because he was not sort of soup of the day, and then he became really popular again and got, you know, massive live shows and stuff, and he even did, I think, one of the big live shows with Springsteen.
Because he did a version of My Girl Bill before that one.
Stop it.
And that didn't go too well.
Gary U.S. Bonds was so impressed, he gave Bruce Springsteen a Chevy Impala.
And a love bite.
As a thank you present. Yeah, and a love bite.
And a love bite.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at the Oz Classics, and there are 12 Australian singles on this chart.
Yep.
Which is another thing that always stands out. You got classics, Australian classics that are still on the radio today. Who Can It Be Now that you mentioned before in the top 10? Cool World by Mondo Rock, still on the radio today.
Yep.
If You Leave Me, Can I Come Too by The Mentals. Still hear it on the radio all the time. But Aussie Crawl, Things Don't Seem. But also on this chart is the Aussies, Jimmy and the Boys with the Tim Finn track, They Won't Let My Girlfriend Talk to Me.
Yeah.
Don't hear it anymore. The Mighty Mysex were in there with Falling In and Out. Mysex were just huge in those days. They had so many songs in the charts back in that era.
I'd forgotten about that song. I watched the clip of it today. Bloody good song.
Great song.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about it. I love Mysex. Blue Day, I reckon, is a great song, but I'd forgotten about this one.
If you hear them on the radio, it's going to be computer games. That's all you'll ever hear. Radio just ignores all these other things. Broderick Smith's big combo, Faded Roses.
Oh, beauty.
What a great track. What a band they were.
Oh, what a good song that is.
Mal Eastick on guitar after he left Stars. I mean, just fantastic. The Sports, How Come, is down the bottom of that chart.
How Come, you keep telling me. Yeah, good song.
Absolutely great track. That was top 10 in Melbourne. How Come by The Sports.
Yep.
If you hear The Sports on the radio today,
How Come
to the radio?
Because it sold a lot, dickhead.
Oh, okay. Well, who listens to the radio?
Yep. But it really annoys me about radio.
Well, no, it's reckless. There's an Aussie song on this I didn't remember. I didn't remember Daryl Cotton and the Divers.
Oh, Little Red Book.
Yeah, which was an Old Man for a Band song. I'd completely forgotten about that song. One of the first things I saw when I looked down the chart, I thought, Daryl Cotton and the Divers, wasn't it? So I remember all the stuff he did with Beeb.
Jessica Muff used to be in that band, but she left.
Stop it.
Daryl and the...
Yes, I know. We all put it together, Brian. it's a Burt Bacharach song that Manfred Mann had a hit with. And he does a really good version of it. I think it was... I'm pretty sure it was only a hit in Melbourne.
Yes, and XY gave it a huge push. And in fact, in those days, XY were doing like a precursor to the top 8 at 8. They were doing the hit line. I think it's 7 at 8. And you used to bring in and vote.
Yep.
And that one for about a week. That track was number one every night.
Oh, they still had the hit line when I came in 82, and because I used to have to plug it.
Right.
And the manipulation of that by certain record companies who would just ring up nonstop and ask, can you play the Daryl Cotton song thing? Can you play the Daryl Cotton song?
Can you play the Daryl Cotton song too?
Can you play the Daryl Cotton song? Unbelievable.
You know, I actually had to do that for Hooked on Hooks.
There you go.
Some work at Mushroom Records, and there was about four of us, and we all sat around the boardroom table there in Dundas Lane.
Yep.
We all had to come up with different voices, and we just pounded that phone line for an hour requesting Skyhooks, Hooked on Hooks.
Yep.
And got in. Yeah. It got in, but it was four of us.
You were doing that down in King Street. The boys at Weir were doing the same thing. The festival boys, everyone was doing it. That phone used to ring like, and you go, geez, that phone goes all the time. You go, yeah, it's all the record companies ringing and trying to get their record on. That's the only way they can get it played.
The good old days.
Yep. Any final thoughts on it, Kenny?
The two mini albums that we talked about. I mean, it's just, this was my second year at high school in 1981. And me, I was a bit abnormal. I was into music and going to gigs as far back as the early 70s. But in 1981, it's where all my friends at school really started getting into music in a big way. Countdown was huge. 3XY was enormous. Everybody was watching the charts every week. And this is the stuff that really takes me back. And it's those lost classics that radio don't play anymore that really hit home for me. It's just a great chart from that era.
Yeah, it is. It is a good chart from that era. Rupert Hines, Misplaced Love, I really like that song.
Oh, I was going to mention it.
Yeah, really, really weird little thing in the middle of Marianne Faithfull does this talking thing where it's almost like she's Linda Blair.
Died a Misplaced Love.
Jesus.
It's another one of those lost classics radio does not play.
Yeah. Brian?
But you hear it and it takes me back to 81.
Okay, my first choice is going to be The Unguarded Moment by The Church.
I think
that was it's a great song, and it really took chances. Like, you know, the guitars are like the birds. He doesn't sing in a register that most people were singing in. It was really a unique band, and, you know, this was perhaps one of their most commercial songs ever, but it's still really cool. And, I'd like to hear this on the radio a bit more often. This is a great song.
Yeah,
so that's now, the other one, of course, is Got to Pull Myself by the Nolans.
Together
with all of the Nolans.
Oh, you want us all to do that?
The Nolans, just the Nolans. There's four of them. That should do the trick. One of the reasons I like this song is because when I was doing my countdown play, I had some song that I could no longer get. And I had three girls in the show, and I was looking for a girl group. And then I came across the Nolans. And if you actually listen to the melody to this and imagine the Beatles playing it and singing it, it's very much a Beatle melody. But anyway, so we got the, we're going to put this in the show, the Nolans, fantastic. And we get all the costumes, the yellow costumes and the white cardigans and stuff. And then we've got the LED screens, so there's rain coming. They do a little dance with the umbrella. It was really well choreographed. Well done, Angie Stapleton. And it was just a really great number, but I was one girl short. So I knew Stephen, who was playing Shirley Strawn in the show, I knew that he had, you know, gone a nighter or whatever, and he could dance and he could sing and he could do everything. So I said, look, would you be the fourth girl? And he goes, oh, yeah, sure, I'll be the girl. So, you know, we dragged him up, put a wig on him and that. Anyway, the first time they come out, you know, we're doing a dress rehearsal, and out they come. They've got all the moves down. It looks terrific. And they come out, and unbeknown to me, Stephen's got one of the biggest cocks the world has ever seen. And me and the producers and the musical director, we can't even hear the song. We can't see the dancing. We're falling off the chair because look at the Nolan with the huge cock. And it was like, oh, my God. So, you know, which was a good gag, but they'd done so much work with the dancing. It was just upstaging everything. So we got it off the thing, and I set a cassette down. I said to Stephen, can you strap it down a bit, you know, like if if we could get halfway through the song before the audience notices that the fourth Nolan's got a cock, that'd be great. So from then on in, he strapped it down. In about halfway through, we noticed that the fourth Nolan had a cock. But first came out, it was this giant pillow. It was enormous. And we were crying and snotting all over Crown Casino in the Palladium or whatever the room, not the Palladium, the showroom or whatever. So that song has a lot of fond memories for me. It's always one of my favourite parts in my countdown show. So there you go. That's the story. I've got to pull myself together and the huge cock.
Right. Not a lot you can say after that, really, is there, except thanks for being on the program. we've got to pull ourselves together and say goodnight. Thank
you,
Kenny.
What about your songs, Kev?
Oh, well, I've mentioned mine. This Little Girl, Faded Roses and Rupert Hine were the ones I immediately picked up on. I thought they were terrific. All right. Good songs. No, we've got to get to the news. Kenny, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure as always. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you. Love it.
See you, Brian. Thanks, take Kenny. Care. Here's the news.
See you, Kev. Oh, thank you, Toby.
You've just experienced Ruck and Roll. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.